Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 2 for Autumn Semester 2011. Lecture 17, delivered on October 31, 2011. The title of this lecture is Degrees of Leverage.
Today, Degrees of Leverage. Now, this is just another way of measuring sensitivity of various parts of an income statement to changes in another part of a financial statement. What I mean by that is this measure I'm going to show you here shows essentially a magnification factor that is involved in that is happening. Oh God, that hurt like hell. Down a financial statement. 3 degrees. The degree of the degree of leverage, the degree of financial leverage, degree of operating leverage, the degree of financial leverage, and then the degree of combined leverage. Now, it's actually, these are really easy, and I'll put one of these on the exam for you. They're really sure points, but it's such a nice little way of quickly seeing, well, as I said, how volatility gets magnified down an income statement. Now, remember, an income statement is an accounting representation of what's actually happening, so it's not going to be a perfect representation. But at the same time, this gives you kind of an idea of what's going on as far as the different factors that affect overall magnification of volatility from the sales line down to the bottom line. So I'll start with the degree of operating, I usually just write DOL there. Degree of operating leverage is a percent change in earnings before interest and taxes divided by the percent change in sales. In other words, what this DOL measures, degree of operating leverage, is how much change is happening in EBIT with respect to a change that happens in sales. Is there a magnification? The answer is, if there are fixed costs, yeah, there will be. Then, the degree of financial leverage is the percent change in net income divided by the percent change in EBIT. In other words, after we've paid the operating expenses, what is going to happen as a result of things like interest and taxes to volatility? And then finally, your last one, if you were to take, well, let me write it, the percent change in net income over the percent change in sales. How much does net income change when for a given percent change in sales? And let me just throw up one. I was going to pull financial, though I can't get the computer working. You can do this with real financials. It's actually so easy to do this with just pulling income statements up, just to quickly run through them, and I'll do one that's pretty easy here. Let's take your sales 2009, 2010. Sales in 2009 were $25,000. Sales in 2010 were $28,000. Now, less, let's just put all your costs together here, less your expenses, which would be, and we'll take this to be $15,000. And this one we would take to be $16,500. And that will give us our EBIT, and this is a real simplified one, $10,000 versus $11,500. And now let's less interest expense, and we'll take that to be $2,000 in both years. And then that would give us our EBT, which would be $8,000, and this one would be 005, $9,500, less taxes at, let's say, 30%, which would be $2,400 in 2009 on $8,000. Is that right? Yeah. 5,600. And I'm not even going to try that one in my head. 30% of 9,500, 0.3 times 9,500 is 2,850. 2,850 minus 500, $6,650. And there's your basic framework. And these are, of course, simple numbers, but you can do this, like I said. All this information is right there for you in financial statements, in the income statements of real firms. Like I said, I can't get the computer to work, or I'd show you this with an actual company. But anyway, degree of operating leverage. We would say, what's the percent? So what you need to do when you do this for doing it for an exam or something like that, or for a homework problem, you're going to need three things. You're going to need the percent change in EBIT. Well, you're going to need the percent change in sales. You're going to need the percent change in EBIT, and you're going to need the percent change in net income. You'll need those three. Just get them done right away. And so for sales, we'll have $28,000 less $25,000, all divided by $25,000. For percent change in EBT, that'll be $11,500 less $10,000, all divided by, help, $10,000. My mind drew a blank there. And then net income would be $6,650 less $5,600, all divided by $5,600. Now remember, these will all be percent changes. Percent changes. And hammering those through, the first one would be $3,000. $25,000 up here. I was going to say, that's a hellacious number. Clear. Okay. 3,000 divided by 25,000 is 12%. So in other words, our sales rose by 12%. Sales volatility, by just a simple measure, 12% rise. Now we'll hammer this one out. 11,500 minus 10,000 divided by 10,000 comes up to be 15%. two decimal places as a percentage. Remember that. You'll get into rounding error too much if you don't do it that way. And then this one, 6650 minus 5600, all divided by 5600. My ass, 18.75%. Okay, those are your three basic pieces. Now we can do the degrees. The degree of operating leverage, DOL, is going to be the percent change in EBIT, percent delta EBIT over percent delta sales, and that will come out to be 15% over 12%. 15 divided by 12 is 1.25. That is a factor, by the way. In other words, every dollar of change percent, for every percent change in sales, 1% change in sales, your EBIT changes by 1.25 times that amount. Again, for every change in sales of 1%, your EBIT will change by 1.25 times that amount. So we have a magnification happening from the sales to the EBIT. Operating expenses through the fixed costs are creating volatility, magnification. And that's what it is. It's volatility magnification. Now let's look at DOF, degree of financial leverage. Percent delta net income over percent delta EBIT. You crank through that one, and you'll find, okay, that's 18.75% over 15%. 18.75 divided by 15. Well, spank me Jesus. 1.25%. 1.25 times, rather. So in other words, for every percent change in the EBIT, it's magnified 1.25 times at the line of the net income. And then your DCL, your degree of combined leverage, is percent change in net income as a result of a percent change in sales. And you would get 18.75 percent over 12%, and so 18.75 divided by 12 is 1.562. My ass, really? 1.5625 times. Well, that's 1.56, so I don't need to worry about it from there. Times. Now, here's a quick check. DOL, degree of operating leverage, times the degree of financial leverage should equal the degree of combined leverage. You should be able to just multiply them to check yourself to see if that's right. Now, here's the deal. What this is telling me, the degree of combined leverage, is telling me that for a percentage change in sales, it's magnified more than 1.5 times by the time you get down to the net income line. Now, it's going to happen, that kind of magnification down the financial statement. It can get scary. Where this comes into play in an interesting way, where, yeah. I don't know what the hell I mean. DOF. D- don't follow me in a car because I run into things and, you know, kids are quick. They can get out of my way, but the old people, you know, it's bad. Anyway, where the hell was I after you corrected me? Here's where it's really interesting, though, is that this degree of combined leverage can be a rather significant thing. You can find degrees of combined leverage that are, in other words, how much a change in sales is magnified by the time you get to the net income line. In some companies, the amount of change is minimal. Well, sales changed by 1%, and that was magnified 1.1 times by the time you got to net income. Others, it can be a huge thing. The power of this little tool, and it is a very simple tool, but it has some nice, quick use to it, is when you look at this decomposition, I can look at degree of combined leverage. And let me show you, let me give you an example. Suppose that I came up with a degree of combined leverage that is 2.9325 times. Now, what that's saying is that a change in sales is magnified nearly three times as a change in net income. Now, you could have someone say, well, why the hell? That's scary because that's telling us that if our sales, percent sales, go down just a little bit, it really whacks us at the net income line. Why is it doing that? And I could say, well, let's look at what that means. DOL times the degree of operating leverage times the degree of financial leverage is the degree of combined leverage. So let's look at how this happened. Okay, that 2.9325 times, it turns out, was the result of 1.15 times the degree of operating leverage and 2.55 times the degree of financial leverage. So now I can answer the question. Oh, it's our financial leverage that's causing all of this magnification, or most of it. It turns out that our fixed costs are not really much of an issue here. It's these, we're just carrying a lot of interest expense. And that's creating all that magnification of volatility. You remember when we did that last round with the coefficients of variation, what a big pain in the ass doing those calculations was? This is like a poor man's version of it. And it's very common to use as a quick way to see, all right, if we've got too much magnification, or if we've got scary magnification, going from sales down to net. What's going on here? Well, I can tell you right now with the one I just did, it's not our fixed costs. Our fixed costs are actually causing us almost no magnification at all. It's our interest payments that are creating all of this magnification. That's wonderful on the upside, you see. I mean, good God, your sales go up by 10%. Your net income will go up by almost 30%. Wow, that's wonderful. But at the same time, that sucks on the downside. Your sales go down by 10%, your net income gets whacked almost 30%. So if you don't like that kind of volatility, it's nice to know in a quick shorthand kind of way, where did the volatility come from? The answer is it came from right there in your financial leverage. That's quite useful to know. At the same time, just out of curiosity, I usually have people say, no, I've never seen this before. And so I should always make sure I have a handy example, but I'll throw one up here if I can. How many of you have ever heard the term gains to leverage?
Were you taught that in accounting or any other business course or in high school anywhere, gains to leverage? Okay, have you ever seen those books or ads where I made a fortune in real estate? It has to do with just buying up properties and then selling them and making a fortune off them. Well, here you go. You see, leverage is a wonderful thing. Financial leverage is a wonderful thing too, until it isn't. I want you to keep in mind these degrees of leverage, but I want to give you a little bit of an example of what is meant by the term gains to leverage and how you could make $1 million or actually become bankrupt beyond your wildest dreams. And we begin with the old story. We have two people in this classroom. See two people who look relatively similar in how they will live their lives and all that. You two will do fine. You are very similar in every way, except one of you is really, really averse to borrowing money. One of you has no problem at all with borrowing money. So we're going to say that each of you, after you graduate, you decide that you want to be neighbors. So you both buy house trailers and move to the south side of East St. Louis. Rough neighborhood, but you're rough kinds of guys. So you say, all right, you go to the loan officer and you explain, I need to borrow this money. And, of course, you're going to include the house trailer, the skirt around it, and a new hog trough out back that you can put a soldering iron into to warm it up, you know, for the ladies and all that, and for the hot tub. And also you have to buy a couple of dogs and things like that. And it comes, for both of you, it's going to come to $100,000. You're going to splurge big time. Splurge big time. But you are not just any south side of East St. Louis kinds of guys. You graduated from Illinois State University and you had Professor C as your inspirational guru. So you decide, all right, we're going to step up. In a year, we want to step up to a better place, a double wide trailer. So, and you've analyzed the markets, and you figure that in a year, you expect each of those house trailers to be worth $120,000. Just by appreciation in the real estate market. We've gone through the housing crisis. We're on the upswing now. Okay, so now, equity and debt. Now, the one of you that is willing to borrow will put down $10,000 and will borrow $90,000 at 5%. The other of you will put down all $100,000 and borrow nothing. Okay. So now let's talk here. 1 year later, we'll see price of the house will be you're expecting $120,000. Now the payback of the loan you'll pay back $90,000, the guy who borrowed, interest on the loan would be 5% of $90,000, which would be $4,500. So, net gain on sale for you would be 120 minus 90 is 30,000. 30,000 minus 4,500 would be 25,500. Okay? Are you okay with that? Let's talk about this fellow here, the one who didn't want any debt. The payback on the loan is zero. The interest on the loan is zero. Oh, I'm sorry. Minus initial investment. I'm sorry. I screwed up there. I have to get this one last line down here, which would be $10,000 of your own money. So the guy who took in the loan nets, after the initial investment, $15,500. Okay, now this fellow who didn't borrow any money, his payback of the loan is zero. There's no interest. So he has finished up at $120,000. Okay? He put down $100,000. So his net after investment is $20,000. It looks like the guy who didn't do any debt came out ahead, right? You see that? Let's see. Let's talk about return on investment, return on equity. The guy who borrowed the money netted $15,500 for an equity investment of $10,000. So his return on equity is 155%. The guy who took on no debt, his return on equity is $20,000 on an initial investment of $100,000, his return on equity is 20%. That is the gains to leverage. Look at what happened. Now, I've used this term before, and I really hope someone remembers it. What's at the heart of this? OPM. That's right, other people's money. It was other people's money that you leveraged with your little equity to blow the roof off ROE. That's how people make enormous amounts of money, just buying up houses using massive amounts of leverage. The downside, though, is, of course, that we have that percent change in the price could have gone the other way. If the price had gone down from $100,000 to, let's say, $80,000, well, what would have happened is that the guy who borrowed money would have gone into bankruptcy. He could not have paid back the loan, not even the principal of it. He would have, as we say technically, taken an ass bath. The guy on the other guy, you would have just sat there and said, well, I'll keep the house, you know, got me the dogs. Never did find a woman, but I got me the dogs. So, you would have been in a better position on the downside. You would have had a lower risk and a lower expected return. Funny how that works. Isn't it interesting? That same thing. You see how the guy who didn't borrow money took a much lower risk. Matter of fact, almost no risk. You lost some of your equity investment, but it's like you still have a home, and you have the Velvet Elvis paintings and the Barry Manilow tapes. Uh-huh. You're out on the street. I mean, you're so poor, they throw you out of south side of East St. Louis. So you have to move to Decatur. With your mom. Okay. Who was living under the in the basement you'd built under the trailer. See, so that's what we mean by gains to leverage, though, is that it's that leveraging action that magnifies a return. That's why when we talk about companies, you know, companies that say, well, we don't use debt in our company, the first thing that you want to say to them is this. Oh, really? Because they are declining the opportunity to magnify the return on equity. Their answer would be, yeah, really. Because our job is to defend the shareholder's position, and if we take leverage, we are putting our shareholders at risk. Now, what would you come back with on that argument? There. They're shareholders. They are at risk, fool. Okay? You don't do that kind of stuff. You don't give them, the shareholders, that magnification, at least to some degree. And you get to the point where these companies that don't do any debt at all, you get into the what's called the Mr. T graph. Yes, pity against fool is an inverse relationship. I don't pity the fool. You're turning away from the possibility of magnifying return on equity, which is what these little measures like CV, degrees of leverage do, is they say, all right, yes, volatility is scary, but volatility is what makes us enhance the possibilities of wealth, of magnifying shareholder wealth. Remember, your job as a business person, and most of you will be captains of industry, well, some of you will work as customer service reps, but many of you will be big people, very important people in businesses, and there will be stockholders. Your job is not to defend the stockholders' wealth. Your job is to maximize shareholder wealth. And that means that it's over a long period of time. So you have to take a balance between the safety of a position like you did with no debt and the risks that are associated with debt, and especially debt at this level. Notice, by the way, that we were at a debt-to-equity ratio of 9-1. We got a whopping shot on ROE for that. If we hadn't done any, 20%, it's nothing to snort at. But at the same time, you find a balance between them. This is the interesting part that has to do with college. A number of people don't go to college because they say, I don't want to take on debt, and college is very expensive. And of course, without going to college, you have a much lower chance of getting a very high-paying job. So you're basically playing that same game that I showed you here. By taking on debt, you are risking the negatives of volatility, but you are also achieving the gains to leverage of using OPM, other people's money. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.